My name is Kenny. I am the pastor of our central campus, but more importantly today, I'm part of our recovery community. I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm in recovery and I'm recovering from addiction and codependency, and I'm just so glad to get to spend this time together today. We're in week two of this teaching series that we've been in called The Unmanageable Life, where we're exploring God's heart, where we're taking some time to examine our own hearts as well. And we're doing so through the lens of Scripture. And through these 12 steps, we're here in this particular community. We have seen so many people find healing, find all kinds of movement forward in life from addiction and all kinds of hangups. We've seen people just find so much freedom in this community, and I'm so excited to get to be part of this conversation with you today. Plus, if you're just jumping in with us today, so either in person or online, I just want to shout out to you a special welcome. We are really, really glad that you're here. I want to welcome you, and I want to let you know that here at Gateway, we're all about helping people explore God and coming together and becoming a unified community of growing and multiplying Christ followers. And so whether you're here exploring faith today, or rather, you are someone who's been following Jesus for a long time, I want you to know today, this is the place for you, and it's a safe place for you to do all of those things. So last week, we kicked this series off, and when we did, we were looking at step one, where we talked about how we admitted we were powerless over a number of things. You kind of fill in the blank there. It could be addiction. It could be control issues you have. It could be codependency. It could be so many different things. And we talked about how we have these things that are a product of our separation from God. We're utterly powerless over those things. We find our life to be very unmanageable. And I think last week, if I remember right, it was right after church, a little later in the day, that the Dallas Cowboys also became very aware and admitted they were powerless over the Los Angeles Rams, who had become very unmanageable to them. Hold your applause, everybody. And if you missed that message, I want to encourage you to go back. And you can go to gatewaychurch.com. You can also go to our YouTube channel, our Gateway Church Austin YouTube channel. You can pick up that message there. But this week, what we're going to do is we're going to be moving forward, and we're going to be talking about step two today. And I want to walk you through a few ways that step two functions in moving us forward in our journey to living in freedom together. So step two says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So right off the bat, I want to talk about the fact that some of you are going to get really hung up on this phrase today. The phrase, restore us to sanity. And the reason I say that is because that implies that there is a current condition in our lives that is being insane, like on one level or another, in some form or another. We're talking about the fact that there's insanity in our lives. And for a lot of cultural reasons, for a lot of clinical reasons, I think that's an issue for a lot of us. We don't want to talk about the fact that there's insanity in our lives. And so the first thing that step two does is it points to our insanity. So now if you Google this word insane, the Oxford Dictionary says that it's being in a state of mind which prevents normal perception, behavior, or social interaction. And in an election year, you're going to see this come to life, probably around the holidays, around some of your tables with family and stuff like that. But I want to give you a little more of a working definition. That might help us even a little bit more today. This is a definition that I learned for the word insanity when I was early in my recovery, and this might help some of you who aren't sure if this is for you today. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result each time. That, my friends, is addiction in a nutshell. But I also know that we don't all struggle with addiction. That's not true for all of us today. And so for any of you who don't, here's another application that you might find helpful. As many of you already know, my wife Jenny and I, we have three boys. Levi's 11, Samuel is 9, Asher is 8. And with each one of the pregnancies with those boys, we hoped, we wondered if maybe one of them might be a girl, right? We thought that might bring a little balance to the force in our home, but it became very clear after having three boys that with me, my wife was destined to be a boy mom. And so after the last 8 years, since our youngest was born, I've been asking Jenny if she might consider the possibility of trying again, that maybe if we just could get pregnant one more time, that this one would surely be a girl, that this one would be the girl that I'd been promising her all along. And she said, of course, no. Like, you're not going to give me a girl. Of course not. You're going to give me another boy. In fact, you're going to fill our whole house with boys. And if you haven't noticed, my hands are already full with you and with the three boys that we have. And plus the fact, Kenny, don't you think you're getting a little bit too old? She's a sweet talker, that one. You should know that. She knows how to butter a guy up for sure. But then it was late last year when Jenny started to say, you know, honey, it would be pretty cool to have a little girl around here. And I was like, yes, yes, it would. She was like, you know, like daddy's little princess. I was like, yes, that's what I've been talking about. Plus, both of us were like, plus, it's 2020. What a great year it would be to have a child. What could go wrong, right? So earlier this year, by God's grace, we got pregnant. Yes. And we got pregnant. We were so excited. We were so excited that for the first time, we were going to go to Jenny's OBG and we were going to hear the words, it's a girl. Nope, having another boy, actually. But having another boy, for sure. In fact, my wife, she's going to be 37 weeks pregnant tomorrow. So please, I would really appreciate prayers for her as we kind of enter into the it could happen at any moment season here. Be praying for Jenny. And based on our definition of insanity today, I know there are many of you right now who are thinking, oh, I get it. So Jenny, she's the one who struggles with insanity in their family, right? And I think that's kind of judgmental of you. I like to think of it a little more this way. I like to think of it as the old Peanuts cartoons. You remember the old Peanuts cartoons? Do you remember you had Lucy and she had the football, remember? And she would tee the football up for Charlie Brown and she would always promise him, look, I'm going to hold the ball. You kick it, Charlie Brown. And over again, Charlie Brown would take the baits and he would go to kick the ball. Well, think of it this way. In our house, I'm Lucy. The ball is my promise to my wife that if we get pregnant again, I'm going to give you a girl. I'll let you guess who my wife is in the Peanuts cartoon. And we'll leave it at that for now. And honey, of course, I'm totally kidding. Seriously, the next time we get pregnant, I'm definitely going to give you a girl. I promise. And you see, friends, Charlie Brown actually gives us a really cute illustration of insanity, right? Problem is, when a person has that sudden realization that like, oh, I'm Charlie Brown, that can be a really humbling thing. Just ask our South Campus pastor when he's up here in a couple weeks teaching on step four. You see, friends, most of us are not comfortable at all with the idea of insanity. And I get that as we start off today because we view insanity as our weakness being exposed. So here's something I find really interesting. So here at Gateway, we say no perfect people allowed. And I actually know a lot of us think that's pretty awesome. But here's the thing. You don't believe that. I'm going to prove that to you right now, too. See, here's the thing. Most of you believe no perfect people allowed. Everyone should be able to come to Gateway and come as they are. That most people should be able to come and everyone should be able to just come just as they are. They don't have to worry about having it all together. That other people should be able to come and know that they don't have to have all the answers or have everything all figured out. In fact, that is the DNA of our Gateway community. It's why we love Gateway. It's why we call it our home. Isn't that right? The problem is many of you don't believe that no perfect people allowed actually applies to you. the thing or the things that you view as flaws or weaknesses in your life, those are the very things that you try to cover up every time you come to church, every time that you come together with others in community. In fact, even as I bring this up right now, there's many of you who are starting to tense up, right? Like, I bring up weakness, and you say, what weakness? What weaknesses are you talking about? I don't have weaknesses. And even if I did, I'm not going to show them in public. You know why? Because I don't want people to judge me. I don't want to hear people's feedback on what's going on in my life, right? What if people realize that I don't belong? What if they realize that I'm not smart enough? What if they realize that I'm not beautiful enough? What if they realize that I'm not strong enough or whatever the case may be? And that's why so many of us work so hard, day after day, week after week, trying to hide all of our weaknesses because we don't want people to really know what's going on in our lives. Last week, we looked at these words from 2 Corinthians 12, where the author had been asking God to remove something in his life that to him felt like a thorn in his flesh. And what did God say to Paul? This is 2 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 9. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So you see, step two points to our insanity. It exposes our imperfections and all of our weaknesses, these areas that we just don't want people to see. We don't mind if other people come and expose theirs. We just don't want people to see ours. Yet these very weaknesses in our lives, these are the things that need to be exposed. They're the things that need to be dragged out into the light. I learned very early in my recovery that we are just as sick as our secrets. That has been true for the last 16 years that I've walked through this recovery journey. And I want to encourage you today that you do have weaknesses. You do have things that are just insane about your life. By the definition that we've been using today, you have these things that are going on. It's not a secret. And if you think it is, it's the worst kept secret in your life. I promise. Just ask the people closest to you. So I want to encourage you today. Let's just try something together, something that might be very liberating and moving us forward in our recovery journey. Just name it. Just say it. Say it out loud or write it down maybe if you're at home today. I want to encourage you just to shout it out loud. And maybe when you do, if you're married, maybe like punch your husband in the arm when you do or kind of smack him in the back of his head. And I don't know why I'm saying that. I just know that's what my wife does when she has aha moments. And it seems to work really well for her. But what you want to do is you just want to say it out loud. Say, look, I'm drowning in debt and I can't stop spending money. I can't. I'm dealing with codependency. I want to please people all the time, and it's exhausting. I'm dealing with control issues. I need a drink just to get through the day. I'm angry all the time. Yes, I know this is Texas, but I don't like country music. And if that's you, you're not alone. I'm with you. I'm abusing prescription drugs way more than I'm prescribed. In fact, I have more than one doctor that's prescribing them. I'm addicted to food. I'm addicted to gaming. I'm addicted to pornography. You just fill in the blank there because, friends, the sooner that we acknowledge the insanity of the brokenness in our lives, the sooner that we will begin to stop trying to manage it. Remember, step one, we admitted that we were powerless, that we're bankrupt to change these things for ourselves. Step two shows us that insanity, but step two also tells us that we've been unconscious. That's the second thing today. The first part of this step says we came to. Think about that. When a person comes to, it means he or she was unconscious, not thinking, checked out. So coming to is waking up to this whole new way of thinking. And friends, that is exactly what we need. So if step one was about admitting our powerlessness, step two is the beginning of looking toward the solution. Albert Einstein said, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." I've been in recovery for 16 years. I've had the privilege of walking quite a few people through the steps during that time. And I have found that step two is where people start to awaken to the insanity, start to awaken to the reality that faulty thinking is what got us into the mess, the stuck place that we find ourselves in. Now, that's bad enough news already. But after many failed attempts at chaos management and damage control, which is exhausting, we also realize that our best thinking was what caused so much damage and negative consequences in our life. That it's really close to home for so many of us today, and I know that. See, again, I'm a recovering addict, and as addicts, we have been on autopilot for so long in our lives. We've been on autopilot toward this course of self-destruction, and most of us fully realize that what we were doing was unhealthy. We fully realized that what we were doing was destroying our finances, our future, our marriages, our families, but we were unable to stop the behavior. Friends, that's insanity. We're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. For me, I started reading the Bible while I was in jail in 2004. And the chaplain of the jail gave me this Gideon's Bible. You know, the ones you find like in a hotel drawer, like those hard Bibles. He threw one of those Bibles to me in jail. And he said, "You should start reading this. Right now, you should start in the Gospel of John." And so I did. I jumped into the Bible and I started reading the Gospel of John, and I couldn't put it down. I read the whole account of Jesus' life through John's perspective. And then when I got done, I was like, "Well, now I don't know where to go. I don't know what to read next." And so I did that thing, you know, that thing that we do sometimes with the Bible where you just kind of go, "Okay, God, I don't know what you want me to read next, but show me what you want me to see." I did one of those, and it led me to Romans. And right here in Romans 13, these words came before me like while I was in a time when I was just coming out of the fog and out of the darkness of my addiction and all of the things that were tied to that addiction. Romans 13, verse 11 says, "And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has come for you to wake up." "The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. Let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave decently as in the daytime, not in orgies," to which most of us go, "Cool, I think I'm doing okay," "and drunkenness," uh-oh, "and in sexual immorality," dang it, "and debauchery and dissension and jealousy," there you go, pretty much it ropes us all in, right? "Rather clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of sinful nature." See, for many of us, we don't want to wake up, do we? We don't want to wake up because we don't want to see what's there. We don't want to wake up because we're afraid to feel or to face the things that we've been running from and we've been trying to avoid for so long. It's just so much easier to kind of paint on that fake face. It's just so much easier to pretend everything's okay and live sort of just unconscious. We're looking for things outside of ourselves that would remedy worry or sadness or anger. We're looking for something that pacifies loneliness or numbs out the pain that we feel. And all the things that we've been using and all the things that we find, they're just these cheap substitutes for what we're really looking for, which is peace and love and joy. Things that we find in a relationship with our Creator. See, all of these ways that we choose to act out, they usually just lead to more shame. and more regret in our lives. That's why like they lead to more than lying and more covering up. And of course, that leads to more fear and paranoia and worry. But we don't want to feel like that. So that just leads to more destructive choices and more addictive behaviors and bad relationships and moral compromises. And the cycle continues and continues in this downward spiral of doing these same things over and over again. And we're expecting different results each time. But friends, we don't need another pill because this pill isn't even working anymore. Let's be honest, right? I only take it to avoid getting sick from the withdrawals. We don't need another show to binge. Like we're only watching Netflix as a distraction anymore, right? We don't need another bad relationship or a regrettable hookup to remind us how desperate we have been for attention, any attention, even negative attention. We don't need anything else in our closet. We don't need another gadget that we're never really going to use. We don't need any more pornography because if I'm honest, I already have a hard drive that is just full of images that are never going to go away. And besides, I'm never satisfied anyway because my addiction always wants more. See, what we need is someone. We need someone who's willing to jump in to the mess with us. We need someone who loves us enough to jump in and who's powerful enough to rescue us and to heal us. Here's one of the tricky things about these first couple steps of recovery. Step one, if you work it properly, it leaves us feeling really empty because we admitted our own powerlessness. We've admitted the unmanageability of our lives. So really we're left saying, well, if I'm powerless and I cannot manage my own life, then who can? Step two says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. This step in our recovery awakens us to our need for hope and the seed of faith that God has given us. Jesus himself says that with just a little seed of faith, what he called a mustard seed of faith, that faith can move mountains. That faith can remove obstacles that have seemed impassable and impossible in our lives. Step two awakens that faith for us. And this begins the process of trusting that a power greater than ourselves is at work in our lives. We prepare for step two humbly by acknowledging that we don't know everything about God. And friends, this is really important because for those of you who are exploring faith today, when I talk about coming to step two, acknowledging that we don't know everything about God, that's a lot easier for you. You're like, yeah, I'm exploring God. I don't know much about God actually. But for you, Christians, for those of you who would say I've been following Christ for some time or I've gone to church my whole life or whatever, this is going to be trickier for you. It takes humility for us who have been walking with God for a time to acknowledge the fact that maybe we don't know everything yet. It takes humility to be able to say maybe there's many of us who have a distorted view of him, and maybe that is what's been making this step so difficult in our lives. I love the way that Neil Anderson talks about this in his book, Victory Over the Darkness. He says that when people struggle with their faith in God, it's not because their faith object has failed or is insufficient. It's because they don't have true knowledge of God and his ways. They expect him to respond in a certain way or answer prayer in a certain way, their way, not his. And when he doesn't comply, they say, "Forget you, God." The problem is, not with God. He's the perfect faith object. Faith in God fails only when people have a faulty understanding of him. So, friends, for any of us here today who've really been struggling with faith, have you considered this? How might misconceptions or faulty understandings of God be getting in the way of your faith in him, beginning in the way of you growing in your faith? When I was incarcerated in Los Angeles, well after a decade of meth addiction in my life, which of course then was full of porn addiction and all kinds of brokenness around sexuality and all. And this stuff went back to early in my teenage years and into my childhood. I couldn't imagine a world where God could still love me. And I know that's real for so many of us today. Like, I couldn't imagine a world where he could ever forgive me. Like, I couldn't forgive myself. Why would I expect that God would be able to forgive me? But friends, I couldn't have been more wrong. Sitting in jail, guilty for everything that I was being charged with, I was wondering if God could ever love someone like me. But he already did. I was wondering if God would ever forgive someone like me. He already had. Like, I'm the one that walked away from God. I was the one that was running from him. But what I came to learn was that God never left me. And friends, he has never left you. So many of us would say that we're searching for God. And I want to tell you right now that if that's you today, you're not doing a very good job, because God is actually really easy to find. In fact, he's probably the easiest person to find in the universe. He's not very good at hide and seek. As it turns out, I love the way that Dallas Willard, he's an American philosopher and author, puts it. He says, God's address is at the end of your rope. Really easy to find. Willard also authored these words in The Divine Conspiracy. We must understand that God does not love without liking us through gritted teeth, as Christian love is sometimes thought to do. Rather, out of the eternal freshness of his perpetually self-renewed being, the Heavenly Father cherishes the earth and each human being upon it. The fondness, the endearment, the unstintingly affectionate regard of God toward all his creatures is the natural outflow of what he is to the core, which we vainly try to capture with our tired but indispensable old word, love. My friends, recovery happens when we come to believe that God is for us. We don't have to have all the knowledge. We don't have to have all the answers. But recovery happens when we come to believe that God is for us and he's not against us. And friends, that is so important today, because many of us, for a lot of us who are going to start this journey during this series, for a lot of us who are going to re-engage maybe with 12 steps or recovery or with exploring faith in a whole new way, this journey is going to begin with some grieving. And I just want to give you that news right up front so you're not surprised by it. Because as we step out of denial in step one, as we begin to get real about the insanity that's in our lives, and as we wake up to our need for hope, we also need to know that the word believe is actually an action word. We use it in a lot of weird ways, but believe is an action word. And that's really important, because step two says we came to believe. One more from Dallas Willard just for fun this morning. He says, in The Renovation of the Heart, we don't believe something by merely saying we believe it, or even when we believe that we believe it. But get this, we believe something when we act as if it were true. As we come to believe that God can and will restore our lives, it's important that we understand that part of how God is going to do that is he's going to show you things that have become idols. He's going to show you things that have become vices, things that you depend on way too much to bring happiness or to make you feel like you're in control or to make you feel like you're important. He's going to show you things that, friends, we need to let go of. Why? Because letting go has to happen before we begin letting God. Letting go has to happen first before we can begin letting God do the things that he wants to do and the things we want him to do in our lives. So again, the journey of healing that we're talking about here it often begins with needing to grieve and mourn the loss of so many things that you thought were going to carry you through this life, but haven't and aren't going to. It starts with having to grieve and mourn the loss of things that we thought were going to make us happy or feel secure or feel beautiful or feel loved, but now you see them for what they really are. And as we let go of those things, and we need to, you're going to have to mourn that loss. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." Comforted by God. And today I want you to know that that is God's way of saying that for those of us who have been stuck, for those of us who know that we are powerless, for those of us who know that this is not going to be easy, God is saying, "I'm with you in this. You are not alone. I'm going to get in the trenches with you. I'm not a God who's way out here or way up there asking you to get your life together and fix everything up, and then you can approach like my throne or something." God says, "No, I've made a way through Jesus and his death and his resurrection for you to have nothing between you and I." I mean, think about it. Have you imagined a God lately who is actually on the throne and invites us to be with him and comes to us in our mess? This both and that is just incredible and that most of us maybe haven't imagined in a long time or ever in our lives. A God who says, "I want to be in the trenches with you. I am with you in this. You are not alone in this battle." I'm going to close the time I have with you today reading you just a quick bit of words from the prophet Isaiah, who just says it so much better than I can. He says this, Isaiah 40, starting at verse 28. "Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary, and he increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and will not grow faint."